From UA Little Rock Public Radio, this is The Art Scene. I'm Daniel Brain. Thea Leopoulos was an ordinary teenager, but after her tragic death at 17 years old, her legacy has changed the lives of countless young people in Arkansas. The Thea Foundation, founded by her parents, has awarded numerous scholarships for high schoolers studying the arts in Arkansas. To date, almost $2 million has gone toward furthering the foundation's goals. This week, we hear about the Thea Foundation's latest efforts to uplift artists beyond high school and college age. The foundation's hosting its art department series in its gallery space in North Little Rock's Argenta neighborhood, showcasing the work of local artists, the first of whom, Brian Fraser, joins the art scene to talk about it. First, though, we'll hear from the foundation's communications director, Amanda Sievers, about the numerous other ways they're working to elevate the arts in Arkansas.
Programming started with the scholarship competition. We now award 36 scholarships to Arkansas high school seniors through art competitions. Everything ranging from performing arts to visual arts to slam poetry, creative writing, film, and fashion design. It's very exciting. Every spring we go through competition season, so we're about to kick that off at the end of February. And then we also have Art Closet, which gives art supplies to teachers across the state. They submit our needs to us and we approve them. This year we will give $100,000 worth of art supplies to Arkansas teachers, and it's just public school teachers for that. Basically, our mission is to advocate the importance of arts in the development of our youth, so we support teachers through K through 12. It's more focused at the high school level. Definitely, our arts reconstruction program actually offers professional development for teachers that are at the high school level, and that training takes place during the summer at the Wingate Center on UA Little Rock's campus.
Is the idea sort of filling a
deficit?
Yeah, I didn't want to say a void, but deficit.
I think we can say deficit and void. I think those are important things to say, especially in Arkansas. It varies by district. Depending upon the school, there's not a lot of available budget for any type of specialty art program. So that's where we come in to try and enhance that programming. Currently, over the past couple of weeks, we've funded a number of projects for Robinson High School, for instance, out west in Little Rock here. And they are going to be expanding their visual arts program into 3D art.
What drew you to the Thea Foundation?
You know, it's a family-run nonprofit, and the story is so heartfelt, and the people I get to work with daily is so enriching for me on a personal level. When I first started working there last year, we had just kicked off our scholarship competition, and it's just amazing to see students from all over the state show up and either perform with such confidence through our performing arts scholarship competition or to show off their visual arts work, which is just mind-blowing that kind of talent is in our state. We had a lot of representation from schools in the Bentonville area, and you can see how much Crystal Bridges has influenced their style of art, how modern and definitely advanced it is. I think I was drawn to work there because I think that the arts are important and I want to help advocate for it. And I feel like creative learning is important. And I think our Art Closet program is a really good example of what can be done to weave the arts to better education as a whole, especially through cross-curricular teaching. Art Closet program is definitely one of our fastest growing programs that we have right now. It started in 2007, and this year we will award $100,000 worth of supplies. The way it works is that a teacher submits their project needs through Donors Choose, which is an online giving platform, and we immediately fund 50% of that project. Because of our increase of funding this year, teachers are actually able to apply 4 times per year. So that's really a great way for them to increase kind of their availability of supplies throughout the school year.
What is the process of tracking student success? Maybe the alumni of the Thea Foundation, people who receive scholarships? Do you see them in 10 years and they're a famous artist or something?
Yes. So that's actually another whole other component of it that has been really enriching for me. We have a number of Thea Scholarship winners who have gone on to do great things. Some of them are even on Broadway right now. We have one Thea Scholarship winner. His name is Chad Burris. He was our first place winner, and I think back in 2014, 13, I'm not sure. But he is Olaf, the snowman in Frozen on Broadway, which is a huge deal. He's an Arkansas student who graduated from OBU, and that's a big step in his career to play that really fun, vivacious character. Obviously, everybody loves Frozen. But there's a lot of success stories like that, especially on Broadway, that we've seen a good return for kind of advancing our students.
Do you see the Thea Foundation and the way that you're helping out these students? Is that, I guess, sort of like a launching pad into a higher education, or is it giving them sort of like a mentoring, more of a technical know-how to do the things to be Olaf and Frozen on Broadway?
Yeah, I don't think that our support necessarily defines their trajectory whatsoever. I do think that it obviously gives them a leg up as far as paying for higher education. But that alone, it's nice for students to have an option to just show up and compete based on their talent alone and their scholarship not be determined by test scores or GPA or anything like that. It's really just their independent talent.
You're talking about mainly focusing on K through 12 students, but I guess what is the role of the adults?
So art department is actually our opportunity to engage with our community that we have in Argenta in Central Arkansas, which is really important. It's a great way for people to just come into our space, meet new artists, support local artists, but also at the same time kind of hear what we're doing statewide, which I think is important. 2020 is very exciting for us because we are also going to be able to host a portion of the 62nd annual Delta Exhibition that the Art Center is kind of dividing up into multiple locations this year while they're under construction.
What is the process, I guess, of selecting? Because it's only four shows that you're doing?
Yes, it's quarterly because we do throughout the year have other exhibitions, including patient art from the Children's Hospital that's shown every October. We will also have representation from AMR, which is an architectural group. They're going to have an exhibition in our space in March, which we're also very excited about. It's quarterly just because we feel like that's a strong representation of kind of a timing of when we can connect with the community, because we are very busy with our fundraisers and also our scholarship competition season, which ties up most of our weekends during the spring. So quarterly is basically all we can do. We're a five-person team. So we are small but mighty at Thea Foundation. But outside of that, as far as curating, I actually had the opportunity to curate this entire year, which was exciting for me. My predecessor had the same responsibility, so I felt like it was just something that was handed to me. I had some learning experiences this past season because the artists were already selected in advance of me coming on board. So it was exciting to kind of see how some of those artists use our space and kind of think about what it would be to select my own. Definitely tried to choose artists that I felt like had a strong following already, but also I hadn't seen a really clean solo exhibition from them, including Brian, who I've liked his art very much for years. We have some really interesting artists later in the year, one of which is Katie McGowan. She is a tattoo artist who has quite the following from being a contestant on Ink Wars for a couple of different seasons and being a celebrity judge there as well. She will be doing her first ever off-skin exhibition because most of her work is on skin. And people fly in to get tattoos from her, so I'm very excited to see her art that's not applied to the body because she does a lot of painting and other things like that. And in April, we will have our first collaborative exhibition from two different artists. That will be Chris Swasta and Hannah Lawrence, kind of a combination of macrame, textiles and ceramics. So I'm excited to see that come together in our space.
So Brian, were you approached by the Thea Foundation? Did you kind of have a good idea what the Thea Foundation was, that they did this sort of thing?
Yeah, I've known about the Thea Foundation for several years, and I've always been impressed with their programming, And I was really flattered to be contacted by Amanda to show my work.
I noticed one thing you said about, I guess it was in your bio on the Thea's website, was that you've never had an exhibition of this size before. Is that, I guess, is that intentional for you guys on your end? You want to have a very big thing?
Yes. Our space is, as far as gallery space in Central Arkansas, I do think it's a good amount of wall space to work with. And I do take that into consideration as far as who I'm selecting. If I feel like they are someone who can commit to producing the amount of work to fill that space and to utilize it to the best they can. And I've seen a lot of Brian's paintings. They're pretty large. And then once he came in, I think he already had ideas about what he could do with our gallery walls. So he's got some very large works that are going to be coming through the door and applied wood backing. Is that what you would call it on canvas?
Stretcher bar.
Stretcher bar. Mm-hmm. See, these are things I don't know.
Terms.
It's made of wood.
It's made of wood? Okay, that's good. I thought it was.
Kind of a wood backing.
Wood backing. We're going to go with that.
So it seems like you really, you didn't have to, I guess, modify your approach to what you do to art. Like, I've heard some people say that, oh, you know, most of my work is small. I don't really have that many works. You know, and I have this huge gallery show coming up. I really have to kick it into high gear or something. What do you see as the role of, I guess, sheer size in your art? Why do you like that?
I like to paint big because I like to draw big, honestly. And these works are drawings just as much as they are paintings. Line technique, line gesture is a big part of what I do. And this show is actually going to it's influencing me to paint even bigger. So I'll be doing my largest piece ever for this show.
How big is that?
It'll be 4 by 8 feet on canvas.
Has that always been the case? I guess, what is your first... how were you introduced to art, and did you always draw big, like you said?
Well, I was taught to draw big because drawing should be a fluid motion with your whole arm instead of just your wrist. I was taught that in college in a life drawing class. Bigger the better, really. And lately I've been painting bigger because we've been doing a lot of commission work for designers, and a lot of them want bigger pieces.
Is that part of your process? You draw the thing first and then you paint it?
Usually. It'll either start with line or some sort of color wash, and then I'll start layering on it and then covering it up again and layering, covering it up.
I think you might have answered this a little bit, but where do the forms that you draw or that you paint come from? Is it just that fluid motion that you're doing? Is it sort of, are you carried away by your muscle memory or something, or your inspiration?
Muscle memory is a good word, because I honestly... that does drive some of the movements. And there are a few different styles. There are landscapes. There are blind contour drawings. My first series was based on blind contour drawings, drawing a subject without looking at it to sort of learn a different way of seeing.
So is that you just look at them once and then don't look at it? Or is it you don't see them at all?
You look at it while you're drawing without looking at the canvas.
Oh, you're not looking at the thing you're creating. Oh,
right.
Okay. How was that? Was that strengthening your technique, like you were saying?
It's an old exercise that is taught in art class. Mm-hmm. It's pretty widely known in the art world, the blind contour exercise. It teaches the brain to truly see what it's drawing versus what you think something may or may not look like. Right brain, left brain thing.
You're listening to The Art Scene from UA Little Rock Public Radio. I'm Daniel Breen. We're speaking with artist Brian Fraser and Amanda Sieverts with the Thea Foundation about its upcoming art department exhibition series. And then in your work, is that inspired by things you see mostly, or is that more of a feeling type thing? You mentioned landscape, certainly that's something you can see. But
I'm inspired by different elements of the work, inspired by the quality of the line, the palette, and then the composition is the overall goal.
How were you introduced to art? What was your first experience with it?
Very young, grade school. When I was young, it was clear that I was, you know, artistic. I could draw things with the kids in the class. You know, we would draw sneakers or monsters or that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And when I got into junior high, I started actually taking art classes and realized it's what I wanted to do pretty early on.
What was the process of finding that style that you mentioned? Is it still an ongoing process, I guess, or is it the question is always, you know, how do you do something if you're not really sure what your style is, or is the doing itself what informs your style?
I think it's ongoing. Mm-hmm. It'll probably always be ongoing.
You started learning art at a very early age. What do you think the relationship is between teaching and practice? Do you teach art at all?
I used to teach art.
Yeah,
I taught art foundations and photography in Jacksonville.
Was that a rewarding experience for you? Or was that sort of difficult to translate this thing that's so intensely personal and sort of apply it to people who aren't very experienced in it?
Pedagogical.
There you go. Pedagogical.
I'm just gonna throw exactly. I took the words right out of my mouth.
Buzzword.
Yeah.
Well, the thing about teaching is that it's almost as much learning as it is teaching. When you teach something, you learn more about it than you ever would from someone else telling it to you, if that makes sense. As far as the difference between teaching and doing it myself, I mean, I don't know. I taught for 5 years. I taught art foundations. So it was a lot of, you know, basic exercise, basic learning, a lot of kids that didn't really want to be there. Mm-hmm. The photography classes were a little bit more rewarding because it was, you know, more older advanced students who really wanted to learn and understand what is composition, you know, which is composition really is what ties it all together. Whether it's a photograph or a painting or a drawing, it doesn't work if the composition isn't good.
And what does composition mean to you specifically?
It's a search for harmony and balance, you know, treating the space well, balancing the space, using positive and negative space. As far as the exact definition of composition, I mean, it really is about harmony and figuring out what makes the space pleasing to the eye, mm-hmm. whether it's color balance or line, gesture. I mean, it's a complicated idea with a very simple answer, really.
Do you see it as sort of following a framework? I know in like classical music especially, it's you can have these different pieces essentially, and they all have this sort of rule structure of what makes a good composition essentially. Mm-hmm. It seems like that way from like my layman's perspective, that art is the same way. There's, you know, rules that mean this is a good composition, rules that mean this is a bad one, or mm-hmm. you can break the rules if you know the rules. How do you see that, I guess?
Well, music and art work hand in hand with the idea of composition for sure. You can even break it down like in song versus a painting. The colors, I would say the colors at first are kind of like the melody. That's what you hear first, that you're attracted to immediately. The lines are sort of like the rhythm of the song, whether the lines are gestural or static. It's the movement of the piece. And I think the depth, the layers, that's more of like the lyrics, you know.
So it's really just an interplay between the two. There isn't like a prescribed way to do it. It's just that you know the building blocks and you have to have them work together, I guess.
You want your composition to work with your style. I mean, that's kind of it. There's a million ways to write a great song. There's a million ways to paint a great picture. And you have to, I mean, the language works through your style, I think.
And I guess this is a deep question for 11 in the morning, but what do you think is the goal of a good composition when you hit it off, when it is in harmony, like you said, what is the ultimate end goal there?
Sell it.
There you go.
No, again, the ultimate goal to write a great song is for people to love it, mm-hmm. you know, and for it to last, for it to mean something to people for a long period of time. And I think it's the same with art. I think especially with art, you want it to last. You don't want the client or the person viewing your work to be tired of it in 6 months. I mean, there needs to be layers to it. There needs to be depth. And in so many ways, it has to work to create that composition. And with great composition, you're going to get harmony in one way or another.
Yeah, and with sort of the music analogy, when there is a good composition, you might not know why it is. Like, you don't have to know all the building blocks or the interplay between the two, but you can hear it. Like, you know, it sounds good to you. Are you ever worried that maybe that's a little harder to do in art, especially, I don't know, more abstract things? Like, if people see it and it strikes them as pleasing, you know, that's one thing. But are you worried that sometimes maybe, not you specifically, but, like, you'll see art pieces that you're like, that's a good composition, but I only know this because I'm an artist. Like, maybe other people sure. wouldn't see that.
Yeah, there's a lot that goes into greatness. You know, I see works that I think have a great composition, but I'm not really turned on by the palette, the colors in it, or I can tell that certain elements of it I'm not drawn to. Maybe it looks a little flat or a little stuck on. So I just really just try to avoid all those things. Make sure it's finished and don't overwork it. Those are things that I'm constantly kind of battling with.
I think because it's interesting, your style, you work so big. What is your perception of, I guess, the space that the work is going to be in after you complete it? While you're doing it, are you thinking of where it's going to go or what it'll be near?
A big rule for me is to never try and imagine what it will be in the end. It just has to happen. Even color-wise, I mean, I can draw out what I think is a good line composition where I think I'm breaking up the space in a way that I think is good, but trying to imagine where it will end up too soon is a big mistake. When we work with interior designers, they often have a specific color palette and style. I work in about 3 or 4 consistent styles, line-wise, composition-wise. And they will request something like this, something like that, but it's never an exact thing. And I think working well with these interior designers, it takes patience and flexibility to work within your style and produce something that's truly good without making it too cookie cutter or too, you know, like to order, something that's exactly what they want to order, you know. And I've actually done a piece similar to that. The client was really specific in what they wanted everything to be on the piece. And I went with it and they were open. They were open to me, open to my style, but it was very specific.
I initially was drawn to Brian's work because of his French Girls. I'm a huge Jane Birkin fan. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of women are. I mean, she's such a fashion icon. Mm-hmm. So his mixed media pieces with her face are so cool to me. I'm a big fan of his abstracts as well, of course, but yeah. The Birkins, can't beat those.
Can't beat the Birkins.
Yeah, I've always been a big fan of Serge Gainsbourg and his music and his style and the whole, you know, the 60s French cinema and art and everything that was. And there's just something magical about Jane Birkin and the records she made with Serge. And I just kind of ran across a photograph of her face. It's amazing. It's an amazing photograph of her, and it's timeless. It says something to me. And I just thought, you know, I'm such a big Warhol and Rauschenberg fan, 50s and 60s yeah. art in general. I wanted to do screen prints. There's something very immediate, very surface level about screen printing. Pop art's everything to me. I mean, I love pop art. I love pop music. the popularity of it, the color of it, the immediacy. That's something about it. And I mean, that's kind of it. I mean, it's just great.
It resonates with everybody.
It does. Yeah. It resonates with young and old. And there was something about Warhol in particular that still lives on. Now, things that he said, the music that he produced, you know, Velvet Underground, and Lou Reed, and, you know, one day everyone will have their own 15 minutes of fame. I mean, how right was that?
Yeah, he kind of really embodied that that mass appeal and sort of wanting to be loved by everyone pretty much, but also not sacrificing his own, I guess, personal sense of style and things that were important to him, like things that would catch his eye, like Marilyn Monroe or a soup can or something.
Right.
Yeah, I guess, is that your style of inspiration? Is it just like a piece of music that you like, or you'll see something and you'll just know that's the thing that you want?
Exactly.
It seems like a very, like a pop art sensibility.
Yeah, I'm inspired. I'll start throwing around some color because of a song that's on. You know, I'll be inspired by not just a piece of art, but like a section of that piece that I think's really great. I've got scrapbooks of just little cutouts of areas that I like. You know, certain types of lines, certain colors. I'm easily impressed.
How do you see art as being a public service? I guess because the Thea Foundation is so focused on education and, I guess, inspiring a new generation of that. And you yourself as a former teacher, like, do you certainly see arts education as sort of being a way of serving the public? But how do you see, I guess, the art itself as accomplishing that?
Well, the integration of arts into the community is a huge thing for me right now. We just started last year the Little Rock Arts District Neighborhood Association, and we are just in the beginning of partnering with other large groups in the area. And this is on the Little Rock side, the west end of downtown. And big reason why I wanted to start that is just that, you know, to help integrate the arts into the community. There's a list of wonderful things that the community benefits from art, you know, not just murals. You know, it heightens civic agenda, civic pride. People are proud of their neighborhoods. It raises property values. It's educational. I mean, there's a laundry list of benefits to integrating the arts. So yeah, I mean, that's what Thea does, and that's one of the main things I've always loved about what they do, and probably the biggest reason why I'm flattered to be involved with this show. So the exhibition is titled Battlefields, and that term comes from the process of the paintings, where I'm starting with lines and color and layering slowly, and really of what to cover up and what to keep. So it's sort of a struggle there, sort of a battle of deciding where that collateral damage, if you will, lies. This is another great rule of thumb in abstract painting is to not fall in love with little areas. Like, oh, this pink color, it's so good, I don't want to cover it up. But when you step back and you look at the whole composition is always the more important path to take.
That was Brian Fraser and Amanda Sievers. They joined the art scene to talk about the Thea Foundation's Art Department Gallery Series, which kicked off February 7th with Fraser's exhibition titled Battlefields. His exhibition runs until February 28th. And that's our show for this week. Please join us next week at the same time. I'm Daniel Brain, and The Art Scene is a presentation of UA Little Rock Public Radio.